So it's Father's Day, right? And that's a little weird. You're like, why is that weird? I don't know. Just because that's the first thing on my notes to say is that Father's Day is weird. So get over it. I'm not like the biggest fan of like mushy-gushy holidays like Father's Day and Mother's Day. And so when I was asked to preach today, I was like, all right, yeah, I'll preach, but I ain't preaching about Father's Day. All right, it's going to be something random. It's not going to be about fathers. So here I am. I'm going to preach about Father's Day to you today. So, so I'm a little surprised about that. Father's Day is kind of weird, isn't it? Because just a month ago, we had Mother's Day. And Mother's Day is like we make this big deal about Mother's Day. We should show our appreciation to mothers, and we do mushy-gushy things, and, you know, on Mother's Day a month ago, we had an open mic, and, you know, mushy-gushy all about our mothers, and it makes sense. It's fitting for Mother's Day because mothers like different things than fathers do, you know. Mothers enjoy things like appreciation and mushy-gushy and feelings and children. And fathers don't really care for most of those things, actually. So it's kind of a weird day because like we want to show appreciation to our dads, right? But yet most of the things that we do on Father's Day is just like a month later of Mother's Day. Like Father's Day just gets leftovers from a month ago. And so I think if we really were to craft a holiday to show appreciation to our fathers, like to be too honest about it, it'd be more like, you know, like dad's sleep in day, or like dad's play video games all day, or dad's, you know, go out on the patio and drink all day, or like dad's don't bother putting on pants day. But Father's Day is not like that, right? Father's Day is not really an honest celebration of appreciation for our fathers a lot of times. It's like this fake thing. It's like this, we just want to appreciate our fathers. And what's so weird about it, what Ryan already kind of mentioned a little bit, is that just like Mother's Day, we all know there's this elephant in the room that Father's Day is weird for some people. Because some people have bad relationships with their fathers or have bad memories of their fathers or just had bad fathers. Some people maybe don't like Father's Day because it reminds them of how bad a father they've been, and their kids won't even talk to them now, or you know, just an estranged relationship there, or maybe children or fathers that we've lost. Father's Day is awkward for a lot of people, but I think the real awkwardness in Father's Day is that it's like this fake appreciation, because on Father's Day, what we do is we just say, dads, you are awesome. And all those things that our dads really are sometimes, those faults that make it awkward for other people, we pretend that elephant is not in the room, right? Father's Day is just a day to say, fathers are awesome across the board. All fathers, you rock, right? But we know that that's not really true. And so today, in preparing for this message, God laid on my heart a different way to look at Father's Day. It's kind of deepened my appreciation for Father's Day. And that is looking at it through the eyes of legacy. And legacy, what I mean by that is just, you can boil it down to this, is that the kind of dad that you had becomes the kind of person that you are. And the kind of dad that you are determines the kind of person that your child is going to be. And that's a scary thought, right? Because there's real potential there to screw up our kids. And there's a lot of screwed up people in the world. I don't know if you noticed, but a lot of them tend to have kids. So I wanted to look in the Bible. Actually, you know what? I lied. I didn't want to look at this in the Bible. I'm just going to tell you about it. So in the Bible, there's this guy named Abijah, okay? And we're going to be talking about Abijah a little more later today. But Abijah was a king of Israel, and it doesn't really say a whole lot about Abijah, but there's this one little verse about Abijah that's like, ouch. It says that Abijah committed all the same sins as his father, which is like just this little dagger of a statement that just says Abijah committed all the same sins of his father. That's like, Wow, I can't even imagine. Okay, so make a list of everything wrong I've ever done, and you're telling me there's potential that my kid might do the exact same things. Every mistake I've ever made, that my kid might repeat those same mistakes. It's scary to think about that the way that we live our lives can have such a negative effect on the way our kids turn out. But it can have such a huge positive effect too. And so understanding this legacy, understanding what we're going to talk about today about legacy and about the good and the bad legacy that a father can have on his children, not only encouraged me to kind of examine myself and my life, and I hope your lives as well, but it also helped me have a deeper appreciation for my dad. So our story today actually kind of ends with this guy, Abijah. And I meant to get out this board thingy here, so just imagine that I'm writing it out. Abijah. There you go. So it actually kind of ends with Abijah, but to really understand who Abijah is, we need to back up a couple generations. Actually, to Abijah's great-grandfather, who was King David. And everyone's like, whew, finally, someone I know. Okay, so David had a dream for a legacy. And there's a lot of great things you could say about David. A lot of what I'm going to say about David today is not the normal things that you hear about him. But don't get me wrong. David was a great guy, and he had a lot of great stories about him, a lot of great things that he did. Overall, we look back and we think of David as this awesome man of God. In fact, the Bible tells us that David was a man after God's own heart. That's the impression that he left on the world. So clearly this guy had a clue about legacy. But David had this dream for his legacy, that he wanted to build a temple for God. Prior to this, the kingdom of Israel, they had been wandering in the desert, and they came into the promised land, blah, blah, blah. They had some history going on. They'd been in the land for a while now. There was King Saul. He was the first king, and now there's King David. He's the second king ever, and the Israelites still don't have a temple. David has this dream to build a temple for God. And so now we actually are going to look in our Bible in 1 Chronicles chapter 22. So David, right before he dies, it's coming to the end of his life, and he's on his deathbed, and he's realizing that he's not actually going to accomplish this dream that he had to build this temple. And so that's where our story picks up here in 1 Chronicles chapter 22 and verse 6. Then he, David, called for his son Solomon and charged him to build a house for the Lord, the God of Israel. David said to Solomon, "My son, I had it in my heart to build a house for the name of the Lord my God. But this word of the Lord came to me, 'You have shed much blood and have fought many wars. You are not to build a house for my name, because you have shed much blood on the earth in my sight. But you will have a son who will be a man of peace and rest, and I will give him rest from all his enemies on every side. His name will be Solomon, and I will grant Israel peace and quiet during his reign. He is the one who will build a house for my name.'" So David has this son named Solomon, and he passes off this legacy of building this temple to Solomon. So Solomon's big legacy on earth, the thing that Israel knew Solomon for a long time, was that he did it. He built this temple. But the thing is that Solomon didn't build the temple as it was described right here in what David told him to do. And I think it makes sense, as I've been looking at this story, it makes sense what Solomon actually did compared to what he was told to do when we look at something else that David told him right before he died. And so this is in the book of 1 Kings. So Chronicles and Kings, little Bible trivia, little background for you. Chronicles and Kings are both kind of tellings of the stories of some of the kings of Israel and Judah. And so a lot of them are parallel stories. It's like one guy told it this way and another guy told it this way. And so we see here, that first story was in 1 Chronicles. This is in 1 Kings. It's the same event. It was when David was dying, and he calls Solomon in to give him his last words. So in 1 Kings chapter 2, it says, when the time drew near for David to die, he gave a charge to Solomon his son. "I am about to go the way of all the earth," he said. "So be strong, act like a man, And I think what David really meant to say is actually a little clearer, the way that the Voice Bible puts it. And don't freak out, I didn't tell you to get the Voice, you're good. but in the Voice, this verse, David says, be strong and demonstrate your maturity. So what David was trying to say here was be mature, you know, be like a man of God, be, you know, David had this reputation of being a man after God's own heart. That's what he was telling Solomon to be, was to be mature. You know, it's time to grow up, and I'm handing the kingdom off to you. It's time for you to be a mature and be a strong leader, but to be a man of God is what he was trying to tell Solomon. But I don't think that that's what Solomon heard. See, I think he heard the NIV version, because we all know that back then they didn't have the Voice Bible. That's kind of a new thing. Solomon actually would have read this in the NIV Bible, and no, I'm just joking. Tina got the joke. No, but I think that the NIV portrays a lot better what I think Solomon took away from this, is that David said, act like a man. So Solomon has this in these last words from his dad of, be strong, be a man, and build a temple. And so that's what Solomon did. He built this grand, magnificent temple, exactly to specifications, exactly how it was supposed to be, with all the ornate everything and beautiful marble and gold and all the statues and the incense and everything that was supposed to be there. He spared no expense in making this beautiful, awesome temple for God. And that was his legacy on the earth. That's what he was remembered for. But the thing is that temple came at a cost. And that cost was the way that he had the temple built. It took a lot of labor to build that temple. And so Solomon was known among his people as a man who imposed this labor on his people, who decided, we're going to build a temple for God, and I'm going to sit up here, and you guys are going to build it. So Solomon kind of ignored what David had said, because David said, I can't build this temple because there was too much bloodshed in my life. You are going to have peace. And so under this banner of peace, you get to build this temple for God. But Solomon didn't do it under this banner of peace. Solomon imposed this harsh labor on his people. And that is the legacy that he left on his son. See, on the world, he left this legacy of building this temple, but the legacy he left on his own son was the way that he built the temple. And I say that, let's fast forward a little bit. Now, Solomon is about to die. And Solomon's heir, his son, is a weird name, Rehoboam. This is why I wanted the paper, just to show you, like, tell me if there's a better way to pronounce this, people. I'm telling you, Rehoboam. Okay, so Rehoboam is Solomon's son. He's the next in line. So Solomon names Rehoboam as king. Solomon dies. Now, Rehoboam is in charge. And this other guy, to make it even more awesomely confusing, this other guy comes in, and his name is Jeroboam, right? Stories in the Bible tend to have like similar names just to get them confused. So, awesome. Good job with that one. So, Jeroboam, or we're just going to call him Jerry. Jerry, I didn't do too much research into who Jerry was, but you can look at this story and see that Jerry had some sort of a misunderstanding, some sort of beef with Solomon. And so Jerry leaves. And he's out of the kingdom for a while. Then Solomon dies, and Jerry comes back. And he comes to Rehoboam, and he brings his followers, okay? So Jerry had a problem with Solomon, and he left the kingdom, and he has followers, okay? He has a following. He has people on his side. Jerry comes to Rehoboam, and he says, "You, Dad, imposed this harsh labor on us. And we didn't like that, so we left. So now we want to know what kind of king you're going to be. Are you going to be harsh like your dad was, or are you going to lighten up? Because if you will lighten up, then we will serve you. We will pledge our allegiance to you. We will follow you." So Rehoboam asks the elders, the people who had served his father and advised his father, he asks the elders, "Okay, what should I do?" And the elders tell him, "Yeah, dude, lighten up. You got all these people that are going to pledge their allegiance to you. You should lighten up." But Rehoboam didn't like that answer. So he asked his buddies. And his buddies told him, no, no, you don't be light. They'll be, man, they're going to take advantage of you. You got to be a tough guy. Which, what's really interesting about this story, this is something that Ryan actually talked about a few weeks ago, is that Rehoboam asked his stupid friends for advice, if you remember this. And in fact, Ryan, I mean, I'm sorry to call you out on this, but how could you preach a sermon about stupid friends and not talk about Rehoboam, right? Did you fail that class in Bible college? Apparently, yes. Sorry, that was just too awesome. Distracted now. So Rehoboam asks his stupid friends, and his stupid friends tell him what he wants to hear, which is why he asked them, right? He didn't, like, if he really cared what they thought, he would ask them first. But he asked the smart guys first, and then he asked his stupid friends, i.e., he didn't like what they said, and he wanted to ask someone who would tell him what he wanted to hear. Why was that what he wanted to hear? Because that's what he learned from his dad. Because the only kind of king he had ever knew how to be was to be just like his dad, to be a tough guy. So Rehoboam goes back to Jeroboam and says, no, man, not only was my dad tough, but I'm going to be tougher. he says, my dad would scourge you with whips. I'm going to scourge you with scorpions. And he said, my little finger is wider than my dad's, well, the NIV says waist. We'll just leave it at that. So Rehoboam goes back with this tough guy act. And Jeroboam responds by saying, well, all right, see you later, buddy. And he splits off. And all of Jeroboam's followers follow him, and now we have two kingdoms. So if you've heard in Bible history, if you've been paying attention at all, that there's like these two kingdoms, Israel and Judah, this is why it happened. It's Rehoboam's fault. He's the one, his stubbornness caused Jeroboam to say, all right, well, I'm taking like pretty much all of Israel, and they're going to be my people, and you can have two tribes out of the 12. So Rehoboam splits the kingdom. So then fast forward now, we're back to Abijah, okay? This is the end of the line, Abijah. I know you're getting tired of hearing about fathers and grandfathers and blah, blah, blah. This is the last one. So Abijah now, and this is not a long story. That's actually the funny part, is that the Bible only gives Abijah 8 verses in the whole Bible. And all it says about Abijah is that he was Rehoboam's son, and he committed all the same sins of his father. And then the Bible actually says this. It says, there's not really much else to say about his life, really. He didn't do any. The only thing worth saying about his life, okay, the only thing that Abijah did is that he did lead in battle against Jeroboam and lost. So this guy has this blip on the radar of a life. He has such a tiny legacy, and the only legacy that he left is fighting Jeroboam, fighting the guy that his dad fought, fighting his dad's battles, and reliving his dad's mistakes, trying to fix his dad's mistakes, but in the end, doing the same thing, being a violent, tough guy, just like Rehoboam was, just like Solomon was. So we see this be a man, this tough guy attitude resounding through these generations, through 3 generations of people. We see how one man's mistake of being a tough guy can have longer lasting effects than simply his own life. But it can affect the entire kingdom being split, and it can affect even his great-grandson. And probably further down than that, if you really wanted to sit around and talk about sons and sons and sons and sons, probably we could see tons of examples of people who just did the same thing as their father. So Abijah made all the same mistakes as his dad. And I wonder, did Rehoboam plan on that? You know, when Rehoboam had this chance to make a decision about whether to be a tough guy or whether to lighten up and have all these followers and kind of unite the kingdom again, did Rehoboam plan on the effect that it would have on Abijah? Of course not. I mean, it's a stupid question. Of course he didn't think of that, because it's not that he set out to be a bad parent. It's not that he decided one day that he wanted to screw up his kids. It was just easier. It was just easier for him at the moment to do what felt right for him than to even give thought to what effect it would have on his son. And I don't know about you, but I know a lot of people like that today. I have friends whose dads left when they were little, who never had a dad growing up, and now my friends are growing up and they're having kids, and you know what they're doing? They're leaving their kids, just like their dads did. I have friends whose dads or stepdads were heavy into drinking and violence and just trying to escape from their problems. And now those kids are growing up, and you know what they're doing? They're drinking excessively, and they are getting violent. And it's not just in these extreme examples. I know other friends who just have the same vices as their dads. Even the little things, even if it's just laziness, you know, if they had a dad who never had a job or never kept a job, those kids are now being lazy and not having a work ethic, just like their dad. Or maybe it's just financial mistakes and not planning for the future and not being able to save and spending all your money and things like that. I have friends who learned that from their parents as well. But I also have a lot of friends that I can think of who do the opposite. And that sounds like a good thing, right? Like immediately it sounds like where you think I'm going is that this is a good thing, but it's not. I know people who look at their parents and go, above all else, I will not raise my kids like my parents raised me. And I'm not talking about the kids who had these extreme examples of, you know, drinking and abuse and all that. I'm talking about your plain old everyday, just little things that their parents did that they didn't like. That the way that a lot of us parent, I see this in myself as well, is to look at our parents and see what they did and say, oh, I didn't like that. I'm gonna do this different. Which is kind of hilarious when you think about it, actually, because I think back about when I was a little kid, and like my parents would make me clean my room or you know, make me do my homework or something, and I remember thinking, I will never do that to my kids. I'll never make them clean their room or do their homework. That's just mean. Why would you ever do that to a kid? It's hilarious when you think about it, but then that's actually how a lot of people end up parenting, is to think, well, my dad left this impression on me of being lazy and never getting a job or overworking and never being around for family, or maybe just checking out emotionally and not really being an emotional dad at all. And so we think, you know, I don't want to be like that. I want to raise my kids differently, which sounds like a great thing, except that if I was capable of being perfect, of being a perfect person, of being a perfect dad, then I could do that without comparing myself to my dad. I'm human, and I'm broken, and I'm messed up. And whatever I try to do, I'm going to fail. And when I put all of my effort and energy into trying to be the opposite of what my dad was, in trying to have a work ethic like my dad didn't, or in trying to, you know, not make the same financial mistakes that my dad did, or whatever it is. And by the way, my dad's right here. I'm not talking about him. These are general things. I know you all are like, this is really awkward, because he is right there. No. These are all just general examples. Sorry. but we all do that. You know, we try to be different, but the thing is that when we do, we ended up screwing it up. And we put all this effort into this one aspect of raising our kids, of trying to make sure they don't do this or they do this, that we don't pay attention to the other things that our kids are actually going to notice. You know, we put all this effort into making sure that they learn about work ethic. And in the end, they learn about work ethic, but they also learn that dad just didn't really, he wasn't emotionally involved at all. He was just detached. It's like all he wanted me to do was work. That's what they see. They don't see about that work ethic. And the point is this, is that it's not about what legacy you try and pour in and leave in your kids. It's about the kind of person that you are. Who you are matters way more than what you do and what you try to teach your kids. And that was David's problem too. You know, there's something kind of missing in this story so far that David told Solomon to be this king of peace, to fly this banner of peace, and then Solomon decided, no, I'm going to be this tough guy. And so far, in me telling this story, we put all the blame on Solomon. Solomon did it wrong. But that's not really what happened. Really what happened is, we've already read, it's already in there, is that David said, I couldn't build this temple because I shed too much blood in my life. David said, I was a tough guy, but I don't want you to be a tough guy. David, in effect, it's almost hypocritical. David is saying, I want you to do as I say and not as I do, right? And we all know that's a crazy, you know, you should never do that. Hypocrisy is bad, but that wasn't what David was attempting to do. He wasn't trying to be a hypocrite. What he was doing was realizing his mistakes. He was admitting his mistakes and beginning to move on from them. And that is a beautiful thing. Admitting our mistakes is the beginning of some great things that David did here, that he began to teach Solomon how to be a man and how to be a king. But the problem is, David was too late. He didn't start any of this until he was on his deathbed. And it's kind of sad. You know, maybe you know some people like that who didn't really give much thought to the kind of dad that they were being or the kind of legacy that they were leaving until it was too late, until they started to think about their mortality and started to realize that their time is almost done. And that's kind of a sad thing to think about, but think of it this way instead, is that every moment that you are alive is another chance for you to not screw that same up, that same mistake up. It's another chance for you to get it right, to leave a legacy on your children more than just do as I say and not as I do. And so I said that starts with admitting your faults. It starts with saying, here's the kind of person I was. These are the mistakes that I made, and I don't want my child to make those same mistakes over again. It takes a difficult moment of introspection, but that's the beginning of it. But there's some other things that David did in this story that are just awesome. When I first read this, I just kind of glazed right over it, and I didn't really realize what David was doing here. And then I read over it a little slower, and it was just glaring at me. Like, this is what David tried to do. And such a beautiful picture if David had only done these things earlier in his life. So in 1 Chronicles chapter 22, again, in verse 5. Okay. In verse 5, David said, my son Solomon is young and inexperienced, and the house to be built for the Lord should be of great magnificence and flame and fame and splendor in the sight of all the nations. Therefore I will make preparations for it. So David made extensive preparations before his death. And guys, if you want to just put the music on, and if the verses screw that up, we'll just do the music instead. Sorry. So David, what he did here, you know, and you can just read through that just like the Bible. Do you ever just read the Bible? Well, I guess first question, do you ever just read the Bible? But you ever try and read the Bible and you just, like, you can read it for like 20 minutes and realize that you have no idea what you just read because it's so easy to just What David did here was he spent time thinking about who his son was, thinking about, he says that Solomon is young and inexperienced. And he took an inward glance at himself, but he also looked at who his son honestly was, and not this vision of who he wanted his son to be, or this dream of being a great sports player, or being a brainiac, or whatever this plan was that he had for him. He spent time thinking about who his son actually was. And then he made preparations for him. It says that David prepared all the materials for Solomon to build this temple. David set Solomon up for success instead of setting him up for failure. And I think, you know, just to bare my heart a little bit, that just spoke to me so much, because I think about financial mistakes that I make and that I continue to make every day, and I think about how I'm not setting John up for success, about how I'm not preparing for him, for his future. I'm not getting the materials ready for him to build a temple. And this could mean a lot of other things besides finances. I'm not trying to get you a sob story and think about finances. I'm just saying to set your children up for success, to prepare for them in whatever way you can. And then in verse 11, David talking here, he says, "Now, my son, the Lord be with you, and may you have success and build the house of the Lord your God as he said you would. May the Lord give you discretion and understanding when he puts you in command over Israel so that you may keep the law of the Lord your God." David prays for his son. And I spend a lot of time praying. Okay, I'm lying. I don't really spend a lot of time praying, but I spend some time praying. But I hardly ever pray for my son. And that's something that I think David set an awesome example for here. And he prays for God's favor for his son. He prays for his son to have discretion and to see things the way they are and to be level-headed. He prays for his son to be upright and moral. And he prays for his son to be strong and courageous. So David did these things. He admitted his mistakes. And he set his son up for success and not for failure. And he prays for his son. And so I want to take just a moment today before we leave just to pray about that. And the thing is that what I'm asking of you today, if this sermon would actually penetrate your heart and really change anything, that is not something that happens like right now. But this is something that you would need to act on and make a life change and change many grand things about your life. I'm not naive enough to think that you're going to do that right now. So what I'm asking right now is that if this spoke to you, that you would just simply take a moment right now to examine your own life and to pray for your child, and that you would commit just to do that. Not even to change anything big, but just would you make it a focal point of your life to examine yourself, to examine what kind of person you're being, what kind of person you're teaching your child to be. And the thing is, I know that another awkward thing for Father's Day is that there are a lot of people in this room who are not fathers. In fact, the non-fathers outnumber the fathers in this room, but obviously this message applies to mothers as well. So there we got a lot more people. But this message honestly applies to everyone. And I know that sounds like a real churchy thing to say, like, oh, you guys, you're responsible for raising kids too, even though you're not a parent. But if there was ever a place where that's true, it's at Dialogue. Because at Dialogue, we are such a family. We're so close that the way that my son turns out is not only dependent on me, but it's dependent on the things that you guys teach him as well. And so each one of you in this room has a chance to influence these kids at Dialogue and other kids that you know in your life, your grandkids or your nieces and nephews. The point is to be an example, to be the kind of person that you would want them to follow. So let's pray. God, Lord, I come to you now. Lord, I can't speak for all these people in this room, Lord, but I come to you, Lord, with a broken heart. Lord, knowing that I am not perfect, not even good by most measures. Father, I pray that in this moment, Lord, that you would speak to me, Lord, things about my life that I would never wish upon my son. Father, I pray, Lord, that you would speak to all of us, Lord, about the kind of people that we're being, and not just being good enough to scrape by. Lord, not riding on the fact that you were a forgiving God and that everything's going to be okay because you still love us. But Father, would we set higher standards for ourselves, if no other reason than just because of the example that we leave on our children and on children around us. Father, could we be more upright? Could we be moral? Could we be responsible? Father, could we be loving and caring? Lord, could we be worshipers? Lord, could we be God followers? Lord, that these children would see us and do the same. Let's just pause for a moment. I want you to do that right now. I want you to think and just let God speak to you if he would say anything about your life and about the example that you are leaving. Let's just be quiet for a minute. Now, Father, I pray for these children. Lord, I pray for my own son. I pray, Lord, for each of these children, the same prayer. Lord, I pray for your favor upon them. Lord, I pray, Lord, I don't pray that bad things would never happen. I pray that bad things would happen. Lord, I pray that they would learn from the experiences in their lives. I pray, Lord, that you would guide them through this path. Father, I pray your favor on them. Lord, that they would have success in anything they put their hand to. I pray that they would learn from us. Lord, I pray what they're going to do anyway, they're going to learn from us. I pray that they would see the example that we try to lead. Father, I pray, Lord, that they would be strong and courageous. I pray that they would be upright and moral people. I pray that they would love you, that they would seek you, that they would be worshipers. Lord, that they would be God followers. Lord, I pray for these children, Lord, for the bright future that they have, Lord. And I pray most of all that you would not let me screw it up. Father, there are so many people in this world who are so screwed up because of something they learned from an adult at some point in their childhood. God, I pray above all, Lord, that you would help me to not be that adult who screws up some kid, my own or someone else's. And I hope, Lord, I hope and I pray that the people in this room would, that their hearts would break the same. Lord, that above all, that they would not dare to leave a bad example for children. Lord, but to live a legacy worth remembering. What a beautiful legacy. Father, I pray you would be lifted high. Lord, in myself, and in these people in this room, and in all of our children.